time. Okay, next, Jabberwocky. You might be puzzled because Jabberwocky is famous for a poem with nonsense words. But that's acceptable in English to say those words. You don't get jumbled up. With sign language translation, of course, we too can invent nonsense signs. For example, "'twas brillig and the slivy toes did gyre and gibble in the wave." Now, sign we invent, "'twas brillig and the slivy toes did," you see that? Okay. "'Twas brillig and the slivy toes did gyre and gimble in the wave. All mimsy were the borogroves and the mown raths outgrabe. Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird and shun the frumious Bandersnatch." He took his vorpal sword in hand. Long time the manxome foe he sought, so rested he by the tum-tum tree and stood a while in thought. And as in uffish thought he stood, the Jabberwock with eyes of flame came whiffling through the tulgey wood and burbled as it came. One, two, one, two, and through the vorpal blade went snickersnack. He left it dead, and with its head, he went galumphing back. "And hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy! Oh, frabjous day, Callooh, Callay!" he chortled in his joy. "'Twas brillig, and the slivy toes did gyre and gimble in the wave. All mimsy were the borogroves, and the mown raths outgrabe." A long while back, I started writing poetry when I was in fifth grade. Started writing a few, all in English, naturally, because I thought that poetry had to be English. One of my earliest poems was called Fuchsias, and that is a flower found often in California, maybe in other places. It looks like this. It's interesting. Not until last year did I finally translate that poem into sign language. I couldn't, for the longest time, sign that poem. Yes, I could write in English, but signing, nothing. Recently, I was able to translate it. You'll notice that the first two lines I switch to be more to fit sign language. In English, the poem is more like English as it's written. In English, it says, "As I look deeply in the early morning unto the lovely fuchsias." Now I sign it, I start with morning, sunrise, the bright looking second, see? "As I look deeply unto the early morning, in the early morning unto the lovely fuchsias, still wet with the night's dew, whirling with the wind, they remind me of my lovely vision of budding ballerinas whirling with the music." The deaf community has different groups within it. Some people, deaf people, go to college, others do not. And those who go to college seem to try to imitate hearing people more, while those who don't go to college seem to remain more deaf. But that's normal for any minority group. One day in the past, there was a situation where those who liked to wear ties and be nice and were sophisticated and wanted to impress people, and another group who liked jeans and long hair and wire rims and being cool wanted to impress their people. Both of those could not get along. They had different goals in the community, for the community. Okay, so I was fed up with that, and I wrote this poem called The Dogs. And why did I choose dogs to represent deaf people? Well, you see, hearing people who don't fingerspell well write, ask information about deaf people. They tend to say, I want information about deaf mutes, D-E-A-T-H, because it sounds almost like deaf, D-E-A-F, deaf, right? And they say mutts, M-U-T, instead of mutes. The dust settles down. Two dogs sit facing each other. One's a Doberman, sharp-eared, sleek, brilliant, successful. The other's a mutt, sloppy, dirty, illiterate, tough. Between them, a chain. At both ends, they have chewed desperately, tugged and tugged at each other, clashing violently, running around and around, but still nothing, still bound. Now they sit, facing each other, growling. The Doberman says, unfortunate, we are dogs alike, but we don't associate. I resent your presence, you lowly animal. The mutt says, you high and mighty snob, I hate your guts. I don't need you. I'd kill you. But if he's dead, I'll have to drag him. No. Damn chain. Yeah, damn chain. But why have that chain? Yes. What does it mean? Chain. Oh, relate. Cooperate. Then freedom. Sign language is obviously a language in itself with its own culture, its own rules, but we've just begun to notice it as a language. But many people oppress it. Many people think that it's good for chimps. You know, Washu, he signs, well, he's not really signing. That's not sign language. He knows a few signs, that's all. So people try to change signs to be more like English. People try to different things, to try to hide it, to push it down. This poem is called Sign is Like a Tree. It tells you how I feel about that. Sign is like a tree. Long time ago, just a dry seedling, nothing, useless, oppressed deep in the ground and covered with the dirt of bare farmland surrounding. Years, years have gone by, pop, a sprout, two sprouts, three, four, and now a tree. Branches here and there, unusual, lovely, natural, creative, expressive. Buildings and people surround the tree. Other trees on its side, in rows, in proper sentences, neatly trimmed and boring. But people say sentential trees perfect, wonderful. People say tree isn't perfect, doesn't fit town and people. Tree is not a true tree. People say it's a good idea, put chimps in tree to swing and play on it. People say it's a good idea, put tree in forest with many trees so people can't see it. But I agree not. It's best a little girl and tree together. strong, proud, tall, spreading out its arms for all to see, to sign. Maybe most of you have not seen it. The next will be not a poem, but a special kind of signing. You can understand it without any spoken interpretation. That is The Road Runner, the title. You know that TV show with the little bird and the coyote? Okay, I'll give it now, with no voicing. The Road Runner. The Coyote. Okay, now this is the last poem. Because I am leaving Washington, D.C. and going to California next month, moving there, this poem inspires me. It's called California Freeways, written by the same woman who wrote the first poem, Total Communication, Dorothy Miles. And this poem has two different kinds of signs. First is as in signs, and the other is as in roadrunners, that style of acting. They're combined. Here in my little car, I follow the freeways, west, east, north, southwest, shuttling here and there. And all sorts of cars and drivers join my journey on the 4-lane, 6-lane, 8-lane, 10-lane roads to anywhere. Fast racing cars with a zoom, boom, boom, and a trail of dust. Aged rattle traps straggling and struggling to get there or bust. Trucks. Tall and truculent, pounding the pavement, carrying thunder and wind, drivers perched high above us, bouncing, wheeling, gears and jaws agrind. Long, sleek, plush Lincolns rolling on silken springs in cigar-scented ease. Bold motorcycles dodging and weaving, cockily taking the lead. And the sudden appearing light flashing, siren screaming, move over, rover, cop, like an angel warning the race to slow down and bringing some soul to a stop. Here in my little car, I follow the freeways, west, east, north, southwest, shuttling here and there. For a while, my life is shared with other drivers on the 4-lane, 6-lane, 8-lane, 10-lane roads to anywhere. Thank you. Join me and go to California. Questions or 3 minutes maybe? Okay, fine. We don't have to. Well, okay, I'll open for questions if anyone's interested to know anything about sign language, poetry, myself, anything. I have a question for you. You were just giving that ABC story that M. You're deaf. Why do you use that sound M in the story? And the E, too. Well, I took that story based on what I've already seen in the past. And it's interesting because ABC, D is the hearing alphabet, and E and M, hand shades, are not often found in ASL. There are no signs with E's and M's, very few at least. So I give it a sound, you know, E and M, that's hearing letters. I didn't miss it. What would the hearing use for that sign, M? How would they do that? Would they say mmm or what? She says, I don't know. Are there other questions? Your skill in signing, have you had any training, or is this your natural expression, or would you work in plays or what? She wants to know if I've had training or theatrical training. I have a background in theater, yes, and also poetry. Also, my knowledge of language itself, its structure, has helped me improve in creating poetry in the language. And I guess I can't explain. I don't know. I think it's part of your nature. I think? Maybe.
The question is, are you going to California to act this summer?
One of the things I would like to do is to analyze my poetry and try to invent different techniques. I hope to establish workshops and share ideas for poetry and sign language. Theater, maybe I do get an acting job, but it's not my number one priority for theater now. I'll be in the San Francisco, Berkeley area. It's interesting. I'm interested in how much of your poetry is done the same way every time. Do you have variety, or do you recursive? Can you repeat the question?
Perhaps you could repeat it and sign it. The question is, do you sign your poems the same way each time, right? Or do you vary them from performance to performance?
Basically, it's the same each time, but there'll be a little bit of change depending upon the mood, and sometimes I forget a line. That's different. She wanted to know if I signed the poems exactly the same each time or there were variety. And I said basically they're the same, but I'd forget a line or change things based on my mood. Do you plan to publish your poetry? She asked me if I plan to publish it. Well, I'd like to, but how? Their English is not the same as signs, so I've been thinking of different ways to get signs, to ideas of connecting the signs with the English, I don't know, illustrations. I'll experiment.
I was wondering, the other day, I was talking to Gil Eastman, he was saying how sometimes it's hard to understand a signed poem the first time, the same as it's hard to understand an English poem the first time. And he was suggesting maybe videotaping a poem so you could see it again and again and again so you understood it. Do you think that's possible with your poetry?
She asked me, Gil Eastman talked with her, and he noted that it was hard to understand a poem the first time. You can't. You have to see it again. Just as in English poetry, the first time you read it, you don't understand it, and then you read it, understand it with after other readings. So I'm wondering if she's wondering if we should videotape it so people could view it for repeated viewings and understand it. And she said, yes, I've made some videotapes of my poem. Now, to sell it, I don't know, possibly with the book combined with videotapes, I don't know. I'm thinking about it. But I have not shoved it aside, but I've been letting it sit with collect dust, but now I've begin to dust off the it and think about it.
I want to ask you a question about the breakdown of your audience in terms of specifically your deaf audience. I'm wondering if you're following, it's hard for me to express this. I'm wondering if you run into any kind of an attitude on the part of non-college educated deaf people. I have run into it myself on the part of deaf friends of mine towards, let's say, the National Theater of the Deaf. They feel that not having gone to college and not considering themselves to be terribly literate signers, they find that kind of use of language, of sign language, is beyond them. And I'm wondering if you run into a similar attitude yourself in terms of a response to your poetry.
In summary, she asked me that some of her deaf friends who haven't been to college do not feel comfortable with, say, NTD, who play with the language, and they feel not comfortable with it. They don't feel as skilled with sign, and they wonder if I have met that kind of people who have experienced that attitude toward my poetry. Well, really, in the first place, I do not perform my poetry very much. I have not. And second, I suppose that a few of my poems people enjoy, and a few poems they may not. I've noticed that when I sign poems, people come saying, I like that poem. They'll say, no, I like that one. You know, so people do see a few poems that they feel good about. I think that it's too early to answer that question now. I have to experience more performances to know what the response is. Is that it? Okay.
I think we have to end. Let us thank you. Our next program in this tent will begin at 4 o'clock. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our next program. That's okay. Our program right now is going to be a workshop in which several of our participants will be discussing what it's like to be deaf in a hearing world. They're going to tell you some stories about their experiences. Maybe they'll share some famous hazards of deafness with you. And maybe they'll make some suggestions. At the end of the time, or after about 15 minutes, I'll open up for questions from the audience. We're going to begin now by asking our participants to introduce themselves, and then we'll start talking about experiences of the deaf in a hearing world. Okay? Whoa, here comes the rain. In just a minute, I think we'll have a much bigger audience.
I had to put my hand up there to feel it, see what it was like, Bill says.
Okay, let's begin now.
It looks like it's making everybody come in, Lily says.
It's a fine idea. I planned it myself. Okay, I'm going to begin now by asking each of our participants to tell you his name and where he comes from and what he does, and then we'll go on with our workshop on being deaf in a hearing world. Okay? Jack, would you begin?
My name is Jack Gannon. I work at the Gallaudet College as Director of Alumni and Public Relations. I live in Silver Springs, Maryland. Hi, my name is Debbie Sonnenstrahl. Really, that's a long name. And I live in the Smithsonian's backyard right over this way. And I also work on the other side of its backyard at Gallaudet College. I'm the director of the new office called Fine Arts in Education, which helps with working with museums all over the country to help them become more sensitive to our special needs. My name is Bill Innes. I live in Greenbelt, Maryland, and I work for USDA as a programmer right over there. My name is Lily Burke. I live in Greenbelt. I'm his neighbor, and I work for the government for the Veterans Administration and teach sign language part-time at Gallaudet College.
You know, occasionally it becomes a problem for deaf people because we hearing people are so silly that we think that everybody can hear. And I was surprised when I first began to meet deaf friends to find that there are a whole series of stories in the deaf community about the hazards of being deaf in a hearing world. I wondered if some of our participants might share some of those stories with you now. Would one of you like to begin? Jack.
All right. In my book, Deaf Heritage, I have an interesting story about sign language saves a man's life. Would you like to hear that? Okay. During the Civil War, during General Sherman's march to the south, to the sea, one day his soldier captured a young deaf man, and the young deaf man was out hunting in the forest, and then all of a sudden he saw all these soldiers surrounding him. They captured him, and he says, I can't hear. But they did not believe him. They thought he was playing deaf and trying to fool them. So they grabbed him and took him up to a tree, ready to lynch him. When another general was coming by on horseback and said, "What's up?" "Oh, this young man here was trying to fool us, trying to make us believe that he's deaf." The general said, "Really? Let me see." He went over and started fingerspelling. "What is your name?" And then the man started answering back. "Where did you go to school?" And he says, "I went to the Georgia School for the Deaf." And they let him go and knew that he was deaf and saved his life. The young man brought the general home and had dinner, and his parents provided dinner, and learned that the general himself had a deaf brother who went to the Illinois School for the Deaf. Thanks to that, it saved his life. And that man, that young boy, was the grandfather of Ruth Phillips.
Thank you for sharing that story. I'd like to interrupt for just a second. Can all of you see the interpreter if he sits down to sign? Is there anyone who can't see him? Okay. Well, we'll try it that way. Okay. Debbie, do you want to add a story?
Yes. Like being deaf in a hearing world, it presents many funny problems. And very often, I think all of us have experienced the same thing when we were little children. Often on a street, someone would have approached me and said something. And I didn't want to reveal my deafness to that person, so I acted like I was really intelligent, and I'd say, you go down this way, 2 blocks, go down that way. Then you turn right, maybe 2-3 blocks, and there you are. And the person asking the question would be really puzzled and couldn't understand. Often he was asking the deaf person for a match.
Thank you.
Do you want me to stand? Do I need to stand? All right. You know why I stand? Because some of you hearing people say it's not that important. It's very important to the deaf audience. They can see all of me from top of my head to the bottom of my toes. In my toes, I have a lot of importance to say through them, important things to say through them. think I'll pick one story that will include this area of deaf theater. Deaf really love to watch movies, and before they were captioned, do you know what captioning is? You know, someone put the lines on the screen so people can read what's being said. But before that was it set up, deaf were good at guessing and good at guesswork, and often the deaf became very observant watching and getting what they were doing. Now, in relationship to deaf and hearing world, when I sit and watch, like when my brother would be sitting there watching maybe a horror movie, and nothing is happening. It's dark, going down a hallway, so maybe something happens at the door, but I couldn't figure it out. And I look over, and my brother is just squirming, just showing apprehension, all this noise in the background. There's this terrible music. And I didn't know what was going on. It was so boring. I said, well, what's he says, wait, wait, something's going to happen. I can't tell you, wait. I was trying to figure out what's up. I can't see anything wrong. Oh, it's terrible. The music's up. Music? What music? What's it talking about? So what are they doing? What's so important to the music to the play? You know, the deaf look for action to come up. Sometimes there's a delay, and the hearing are already scared maybe a moment or two before, and then all of a sudden it pops up, and he's already jumped up, then there's a delay, and I jump up. See, it's something else I've lost here. I guess I'll have to save it till later because I've lost, I can't remember what it was. I never had that experience, but there's a young boy in my sign language class. Oh, you want me to stand up? Okay. I don't have those kind of things happen, but something just came up I thought of. There's a boy, that young fella in my sign language class, hearing guy, and he was telling me this story that he went into Metro. And he's a Georgetown student, and he was wearing on the back of his jacket Georgetown. And he's riding along, and he heard the group from George Washington students come on. And showing, you know, there are a lot of tremendous rivalry between basketball or something, I don't know. They said something to him about that boy, Georgetown. They started making fun of him and hurling insults. It kind of scared him. He was about ready to get off, and he thought, you know, they're going to do something to him. So he looked, and he says, I can't hear, I can't hear. He pointed to his ears to protect himself. And the boys backed off of him. And then he got off the Metro. And then one lady says, oh, that's terrible, those boys trying to hurt that deaf boy, that poor thing, in the Metro. And I thought, oh, boy, it was wonderful, but I didn't like that, you know? He was using deafness as some kind of an excuse, and I really didn't like it, but that was an experience.
Thank you. Debbie.
I have a funny story that just happened to me. I'm very generous to share it with you because it's very embarrassing, but what the heck? Let me share it with you. About 4 years ago, I moved to a new apartment, and I never got a chance to use my swimming pool at the apartment. One day, about 3 weeks later, I decided I need to use the pool, make good use of my money. So it was a beautiful Sunday morning, put on my bikini, and went down to the pool with the Sunday morning newspaper. And I picked an empty chair, laid down on it. And naturally, like Bill says, we're very observant. We look the situation over, get a good look around us, and I happen to see a nice-looking man laying on the next one nearby, reading the newspaper. He was a nice-looking fellow over there. Then my deaf neighbor came up through the fence and was saying, come on, come join with me. And I was signing to her. Both of us are deaf, we were signing each other. I said, come on, join me here. There's this nice-looking man over here. Maybe we can get something started up with him, you know? Maybe some kind of a conversation or something. You know, we should be good neighbors, and it's a good time to get started. My neighbor became really red in the face, was so embarrassed. He says, oh, Debbie, act your age, and so on and so forth. I said, oh, come on. She said she couldn't join me because she had another appointment she had to leave. I said, okay, I'll tell you what the second chapter will be. And she says, I'll stop it, and she left. So I was reading the paper. This very same good-looking man got up, walked over to me, and started signing to me. Do you live here?
That's nice. Of course, over the years, deaf people have developed ways to avoid hazards of living in a hearing world, and some of those ways have turned out to be quite a help to the hearing world. Weren't you telling me about a baseball player, Hoy, Jack, who developed signals in baseball?
Oh, yeah, Dummy Hoy?
Yeah.
Yes, I think many people probably know that Dummy Hoy, his first name was William. His nickname was Dummy because he didn't talk. A long time ago, that was a common nickname given to deaf people. Dummy Hoy played baseball for the Cincinnati Reds. He was an outfielder. And in one game, he set a record for three straight throwouts from outfield to home plate. I don't know if that record still stands or not, but he was standing out there, and he couldn't see what the count was on the batter, ball, strikes, or whatever. So they made an agreement with the umpire to raise his hand when it was ball and then raise his left hand strike and so forth, and then that led to the baseball out, strikes one, two, and three, and so forth, which you have today. Then back to some hazards or dangers of deafness. I have some tragedy, you know, stories connected to being deaf. Many, many deaf people were killed by trains. And you may think that's kind of weird that deaf people walking along the tracks, they should know is dangerous. Then stop to realize that a long time ago, you didn't have any sidewalks. The highways were mud. So people did, deaf and hearing, would tend to get up and walk along the tracks as sidewalks. And often it would happen they would walk along not looking back and get hit by a train, and it killed many. It became a habit for the newspaper among the deaf people to keep the numbers. Up now, 45, you know, number 45 got killed in Mississippi, number 46 over there. That was one of those stories about hazards. It says, keep on going, Bill says. Another tragedy happened three different times, three different places. I'll just pick one. Was a deaf teacher in Mississippi. He was playing Santa Claus one Christmas Eve and was on his way to the school to be Santa Claus for children, decided to stop by his nephew's home to surprise him. Thought, oh, Santa Claus, you know, so he's all dressed up, knocked on the door, and there was no answer. He knocked on the door again, and he kept knocking. Well, it happened that the young nephew was home alone. His parents had gone out for some reason, and he was really panic-stricken. And he got the family shotgun and told whoever's at the door, go away or I'll shoot. The uncle, being deaf, did not hear it, kept pounding on the door. Go away or I'm going to shoot. And he didn't hear him. He kept on knocking. He got shot through the door and killed his uncle. That's a danger.
That's a terrible story.
I think I'll try to whitewash, what do you call, try to put that aside. It's a fact of life, but see if I can lighten it up here a little. Often playing in the swimming pool, the deaf may set up like football teams, play games in the pool. Sometimes you have a problem when you come into the huddle, you know. Oh, I understand you can tell the story about the huddle later, okay? We get together and we talk about our plays, but you know, deaf eyes are really sharp. They be seeing what you're going to do and know what the play is. So you know what we do? We go underwater and we talk in the water, sign, and everybody, okay, and then they come up and then go and start playing the next for the next play. Go underwater, Jack says. Whew.
That's really something.
Tell them about the huddle, Jack. It's common knowledge that deaf people invented the football huddle. And I tried very hard to document that story, but was not able to. Because imagine people starting using the huddle and saying, hey, this is a huddle. It didn't happen that way. But it's pretty certain that deaf people did invent the huddle to prevent the opposite team from seeing their signals. And I checked the Football Encyclopedia, what it had to say about the football huddle, and they gave credit to a coach at the University of Illinois back in 1920. And that was easy to change that because our college football team began in 1880s or 1890s. So I feel sure that the information that we have, that a man who claims credit for that, mentioned it to a few people, Paul Hubbard. He was a quarterback at the Gallaudet football team, and later he moved to Kansas and started football coaching there at the school and at the public high school at Olathe High School. And they have a football fellow named for, they have a football name, they have a football field named for him, for Hubbard, at the Kansas School for the Deaf. I really think deaf people probably did invent the football huddle.
Let me ask at this point if anyone in our audience has a question they'd like to address up here to these people, or if you have an experience that you'd like to share. Any questions out there? Sign language? Growing up deaf? Okay.
We'd like to ask the panel the deaf traditions, going to reading class. What, was it a good idea to teach for teachers? Good idea for the children to learn sign language and deafness in history, or the history of the deaf. I hope the book will be used in the classrooms. I know that several classes at Gallaudet College will begin to use it. Southwest Institute, Collegiate College for the Deaf, will use it this fall. National Technical Institute for the Deaf plans to use it in this fall. I hope that the schools will use it. Yes, I think it's very important to teach deaf children about deaf heritage. We all need to know who we are, where we come from. Yes. It's important that we develop this pride. Spanish history, deaf history, at Gallaudet College and other places should have deaf history, and I think it would be good. And Gallaudet, you know, should have, like, deaf history at Gallaudet.
Comments about it. I work for the PG County Health Department as a community developer for practical health care for the deaf. When I noticed that book and I thought it was a very, very good book, then I asked my boss, who, where we have a small library, to buy one of his books, and he did. And I was thinking of having the audiology department to look at that too, so that the parents who get there once in a while, they can refer to that book as a source of information. And that's a very good book, Jay.
While we're making plugs for the book, we happen to be selling it here. Not in this tent, but over in our craft sales tent on the other side of the metal trailer, where we have a small book exhibit. We're offering just a few titles, including Jack's book. And you will find, if you were dragged through history books in school and never want to be dragged through another one, that this is no drag. It's full of stories, anecdotal material, pictures, jokes. It's a sugar-coated pill of history. Here. Are there any other questions? This person has asked what the occupations of these people are. Maybe you could just tell them again, since perhaps you weren't here at the beginning. Let's repeat that.
I am a director of Alumni and Public Relations at Gallaudet College here in Washington, D.C. Gallaudet College is a world's only liberal arts college for the deaf. I work at the same place where Jack works, but in a different office. I am the director of the Office of Fine Arts in Education, which works with museums all over the country to help them to become more sensitive to the needs of deaf people. I work for the United States Department of Agriculture as a computer programmer with the Food and Nutrition Service. I work for the government at the Veterans Administration office work, and I teach part-time sign language classes at Gallaudet College.
My teacher said that she had to go to the doctor one day because she was feeling really sick. So she went to the doctor's office and she went up to the receptionist and she wrote down on paper that she was deaf and told the receptionist that she wanted to see the doctor and why she had to see the doctor. So then she went into the waiting room and there were other people in there before her. And she saw these people go into the doctor's office and then she saw them leave. Then she saw other people come in after her into the doctor's office. She saw them get waited on, and she saw them leave. Then she saw more people come in, and she saw them leave. And then she started looking at her watch, and she had been there for a few hours. And she was wondering what in the world was wrong, and why hadn't she been waited on? So she went up to the receptionist to find out why, and the receptionist said, "I kept calling your name and calling your name. You didn't hear me. Why didn't you come in?" And then she said, then she realized, "Oh, I forgot you were deaf," which really upset the teacher.
Thank you. Lily?
Yes, that's possible. That can happen, but that never happened to me because when I go into the doctor's office, I know when everybody's, I keep reminding the receptionist, "Remember, I'm deaf, I can't hear." And so they keep remembering that I'm deaf, and I keep reminding her, and I keep fidgeting. So she knows she's still there, and so they serve me well, so I don't sit there real patiently waiting. I won't do that. My recent experience over there, at the barbecue ribs, I go over there and I tell the man I'm deaf, and then I write it down on the list what I want. So I tell you I'm deaf, I can't hear him. He says, "I don't know what my number is." He says, "Just step right there," and they give me my order real fast, and I go on and I eat. I always tell people I'm deaf and always get the sympathy.
Do you want me to come up, stand up front?